back to the Steve Cochran Show.
In many ways, society has turned jails and prisons into mental health clinics. And you're actually running one here.
Yeah. I said, okay, if they're going to make it so that I am going to be the largest mental health provider, we're going to be the best ones. We're going to treat them as a patient while they're here. It's like, we are going to think differently.
Sheriff Tom Dart from 60 Minutes on Sunday night. The story of, and frankly, the underreported story by all of us. Until now, the 60 Minutes story has created a bunch of buzz and more focus on what Sheriff Dart is dealing with every day and what his people are dealing with every day. And he joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Steve. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Nice to have you back on. I thought this story was fair. I thought it was accurate by all accounts that I was aware of, but I also learned a bunch of things from it, including the number of prisoners that get processed through and this amazing negative time piece. Talk about the negative time thing, because I don't think people understand that.
You know, what ends up happening in the most simplistic terms is that people sit in the jail for so long, and you got to understand, and I know me, because I've been involved in the system, Pat Brady has as well. You know, we sometimes talk over people, but jails are supposed to be just a waiting place where people are waiting to have their trial, and then if they're found guilty, off they go. But at our place, people sit there for such a long time that they accumulate so much time that when they plead guilty, they've already served all their time and some additional days as well that they are now don't get credit for like their next crime or anything like that. They just are serving more time than their actual sentence was. So it's the insanity of the system that is so, you know, disinterested at best, you know. And so here you have people, they say, what do you say to them afterwards when they plead guilty to a year in prison, but they already served, you know, 12 months or 13 months. It's like, we owe you a month.
I mean, you can't give people that time back.
That's
their life. That's we hear all these stories about wrongful convictions and these horrific things. Those are fortunately few and far between. There's a lot of them, and my friend Laura Caldwell is a big part of trying to change that. But we're talking about a lot of people who are caught up in the system. So how do you fix that? Is that just court delays?
Yeah, it's court delays. And there's some phenomenal judges out there, and I could give you a list of some of the most passionate, greatest ones in the world. But then there's a lot of them, frankly, who it just doesn't, you know, matter to them. That there's people that are just wallowing in the system where they just need to have their case resolved and do it in a thoughtful fashion and quickly, and then these things don't happen. But as you said, Steve, it's a great, great comparison there, what you just brought up. The attention, rightfully so, on wrongful convictions that don't occur that often. But these happen by the hundreds where, you know, here's an extra week you spent here, an extra month, here's an extra year. And no one ever hears about those people. They just go on about their lives, and they had yet they had like a year sucked out of it sitting in the jail, which isn't a pleasant place to be.
You every day have a job to oversee one of the largest jails in the country and a lot of people who are not mentally sound. And you made the point in the clip leading in. And I've heard you make it before. You've made it here, made it other places. If you're going to be tasked to running a mental health facility, and frankly, the state is not doing their job in this, you're going to try to do it better. What are you trying to do differently, keeping in mind these are folks that are prisoners, technically? What are you doing differently to try to process these people so they can go get the help they really need?
You know what, Steve? I swear to you, it was as simple as me thinking to myself, what would I want to happen if this was one of my loved ones? And really, I'm not joking, Steve, changing it so that I don't look at them as criminals. Because someone will say, well, Tom, you're a fool. They were people who committed a crime. And I'd say, you're the fool. Because the reality is, if you look at the crime they committed, they were doing what a logical person in their place would do, which is they were looking for a place to sleep. That's what they got arrested for. They were looking for something to eat. That's what they got arrested for. So I dispense with this notion I'm going to look at them as criminals. I'm going to look at them as someone who has an illness, who's not getting treated on the outside, so I'm going to be their treatment facility, and I'm going to treat them. We're going to diagnose it. We're going to treat it. We're going to work with their families to get them back together. I'm going to work to get them housing so they have a place to live. And I'm going to work with them when they have the problems once they leave. I'm going to be there. I run a 24-hour hotline. So if they have crisis, we are going to answer that. I've got some amazing people donated vans to me so we can go out to the house and we can sort of de-escalate the problem, work with the family, whatever needs to be. And unlike in the past where they were treated like any other inmate, when it was time to leave, they wandered out the door and just wandered around for a while until they vanished. We actually drive them home now. So it's like literally looking at them as if they're a patient that went into a hospital and what we're going to do for them. And,
really and by the way, you know, I'm glad you brought up, too, the folks that have it all figured out, because I'll get a handful of texts every day from those types. You don't walk the walk. You don't walk the walk. So for anybody to go, hey, they're criminals, they committed a crime, they deserve what they're getting, and they'll go to church on Sunday and pretend they're Christians. You got to take a bigger worldview than that, and you have to understand what's going on. And there were two women that were featured in the 60 Minutes piece that look amazing, that are part of your staff. They go out and deal with these folks every day as well that are in the regular prison population, and you're trying to save them.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, this is what we're all supposed to do on this earth, is look out for our fellow man, especially someone who's in need. And this isn't being some type of preachy type of, you know, no, that's really what we're supposed to do here. And to try to isolate yourself from this, that is going to doom us to be that generation everyone looks at and says, what rotten people they were. They locked up all the mentally ill.
Those two women I mentioned, what were their names? Because I don't have it in front of me. I just want to give
Ellie Montgomery. Ellie Montgomery, who is amazing. She weighs all of about like 80 pounds soaking wet, and you'll see her face to face talking with guys who are 6'6", you know, 250 pounds, who are schizophrenic, and she is just right there with them saying, you're going to talk to me, we're going to work through this. And then I had Dr. Nika Jones, who's running the jail, who's a psychologist, who's just phenomenal, who people all question when I put her in charge of the jail, you know, oh, my God, she's going to be saying everyone's got a mental health problem and they all deserve to hold their hands. She's as tough as nails. She is a phenomenal doctor, but she is as tough as nails, and she doesn't get fooled by these people.
Right, because that's the thing. You can't be walked over, because there are folks who are trying to game the system or on the inside as well. There's another, and I would encourage people to go to the CBS website or just search 60 Minutes and Tom Dart, and you'll find the piece from Sunday night and watch it. But there's a weekly thing that I wasn't aware of that you do, where you go and you talk to these guys and you try to get a sense of who they are, where they are, and where the process is for them. Because it can't be a stack of files on your desk. You go and you talk to them as human beings. And these inmates will circle around you and they'll tell you whether or not they've got a lawyer and the last time they heard from their lawyer, and things of that nature. Yep. Because you brought up at one point, if a lot of these folks had $500, they'd make bail and they'd be outside and trying to help their family and doing whatever they're doing and not dealing with their minor offense on the inside. And you'd have another bed on the inside as well. So
I have an assistant named Cara Smith, who's phenomenal. She got that up and rolling. And the story, these are all with minimum security guys, Steve.
Right.
And when we're talking to them, they're explaining to us, it's like, listen, I talked to my boss. He says if I can get out in the next 2 or 3 days, he'll hang on to my job for me. If I can't get out, and we'll call and we'll check with him. The boss will say, yeah, that's the truth. And we're looking and saying, listen, he needs $500 to get out. Otherwise, he's going to lose his job. How is a society, are we better off that this guy's unemployed now?
Yeah, exactly. Pay me now or pay me later. So go watch the piece, because I already had respect with what you were dealing with over there, but I had no idea, again, until I saw what 60 Minutes put up Sunday night, and we all could have done a better job of covering it, but that's why you're always invited back here. Now, the part of the story also dealt with your guys, and, you know, you occasionally have these walk-offs and jobs, and you've been very upfront and honest about the fact that a lot of the folks that work for you maybe aren't that fond of you. What's your relationship with the rank-and-file officers and the guards?
You know, with the ones who are, you know, the majority, I believe, who are committed people doing the most difficult job on the planet, I would contend, they, I think, enjoy the leadership that we have there and the direction we're taking it to, where literally they can tell anybody that they come across where they work, and they're respected across the country because of it. Now, is there a smaller group who sit there and are upset with a lot of stuff I'm doing? Yeah, but to be honest with you, most of the stuff they're upset with is that I insist on people showing up for work. It's not because there's this philosophical disagreement about how I'm treating people. And in some of these units where there were some of the things that I'm doing a little more unconventional, it was with that making it a better environment for the staff. And you know, one of the things, Steve, one of my worst units, I got rid of segregation. The staff did amazing jobs. What it led to, though, was less attacks on my staff. All the stuff was driven by, okay, how can I make it safer for my staff?
Yeah.
And this is what we found. The number of assaults on the staff have plummeted since we've been doing these programs.
The guards that are there, do they believe you have their back first?
I think that the majority of them absolutely do, because for one thing, they see me wandering around there all the time. So that's quite unusual in and of itself. You know, usually the boss sits in the ivory tower over the Daly Center. That's where the traditional sheriff's office is. I've been sitting in the jail for 8 or 9 years.
You just did a City Club speech, right? Wasn't that this week?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Yeah, talking about cybercrime. Maybe we get you back in to hit this in detail since we don't have time to cover it now. But are you dealing with cybercrime as part of the jurisdiction as well?
Yeah, you know, Steve, it's one of those things where we get a lot of financial crimes to start with. And it's been made abundantly clear to me that there's no way we're going to arrest our way out of this. So the thing to do is to inform people about where their information is. And it's absolutely frightening how routinely everybody, I'm not just talking about hackers, but how companies basically take your information, you know, where you're physically located at a given day, what websites you went to, and then they sell it to all these different companies that then use it to try to either reach out to you, to sell you things, or you name it. But the bottom line is that all these things that you think are very private are not. All your information is being sucked up by these people, and no one's looking at it.
Yeah, that's why I was talking about LifeLock on the show. I got hacked a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, Steve, who don't you know that has had this? And my wife had her psych hacked as well. She had to change all that, and all the information had to go as well. So, I mean, it's out there, but we just have to be more thoughtful, and I don't think people understand the breadth of what is out there of your personal side of things.
Oh, like, I know how busy you are, but I appreciate your time always, and I thought the piece was fair, and I hope people go see it. Just Google 60 Minutes Tom Dart, and you'll see the piece from Sunday night. Thanks for jumping on.
Thank you so much, Steve. Take care.
Take care. 7:23, make it 7:22, actually. Let's do traffic with Mary.